Next case is Honeywell International v. Mexichem, Amanco, and Dakin Industries, 2016-1696. Mr. Locascio.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. For over a decade, the world searched in vain for a safe, stable heat transfer composition that would not contribute to global warming. In 2002, Honeywell discovered the unexpected solution, that a combination of what was a disfavored, unsaturated refrigerant, HFO-1234YF, and a reactive lubricant, polyalkylene glycol, or PAG, solved that problem.
Counsel, I think we're aware of what we're dealing with here. Why don't you speak to whether the board relied on a new reference, and how did it use that reference?
Sure. Thank you, Judge Rayner. This is the first of the two bases for this one, for vacature and remand. We'll get to obviousness on reversal in a second. But the board definitely relied on a new ground, and that ground was reliance on Amure. And to start out with, where the board relies on a new ground, obviously the applicant's entitled to respond to that. In this case, the Amure reference, there's no testimony from anyone or any indication of what one of skill in the art would read that to be, because the examiner didn't rely on it. It's not mentioned in the RAN. It's not mentioned in the ACP at all. And then the board comes round to that and actually starts to become fact finder, as if this was an IPR and not a re-exam appeal, and relies on Amure. And how they do so is at base comparison, the standard test, obviously, Biederman, Lytham, compare the examiner's decision to the board's decision. And the examiner specifically said in the RAN, let me take one step back. The patent owner here provided expert testimony, declarations, Dr. Chambers, Dr. Thomas, speaking to the unpredictability that one believed would be the case when you use an unstable lubricant and an unstable refrigerant, and actual test data to show unexpected results on that score. The examiner rejected that. And the examiner rejected that, this is at A2580 in the RAN, by saying that the stability data presented do not contradict the fact that stability is an inherent property. The board, when they look at that exact question, specifically says, page A29, we disagree. And then the board goes on to say that the evidence that the examiner disregarded from Dr. Chambers, Dr. Thomas, was actually evidence the invention is not obvious and must be considered. That's in the board's decision. What the board then goes on to do is say all the actual evidence yet to get to Amure shows unpredictability of the miscibility and stability of this particular combination. And if you take all the Inagaki embodiments and you try them with a PAG, embodiment 1 doesn't work. Embodiment 4 doesn't work. This particular 1234YF works, and it's unexpected. But then what the board does at A30, A31, and A33 is say, but Amure says the opposite. And so what the board says at A31 is, we have Chambers. However, Amure's statement that another HFO compound, also having a double bond and highly reactive fluorine atoms, shows superior thermal stability is a fact that we weigh against Chambers' assertion that the results of 1234YF and PAG were necessarily unexpected. Thus, as evidenced by Amure, a skilled artisan would no more have expected failure with respect to the stability of combining hydrofluoroolefins with PEG.
So did the board use Amure just to rebut the secondary considerations evidence?
I would say no, but I think the argument now to try to save this, if you will, both, I think the board, I don't think that they included it only after the heading secondary considerations at pages 30, 31 makes a difference. And I think to try to salvage it, that's the argument we see back from the appellees. It isn't, because what Amure is being used for is Amure's the glue. Obviously, for the obviousness rejection to start with, there has to be a reasonable expectation of success. Why would you pick these two things that no one picked for a decade to combine? And would you expect them to work?
Well, decade or not. I mean, you've got, Inagaki, which has these five compounds, one of which is a tetrafluoropropene and a suggestion of a lubricant. And among the lubricants are polyalkylene glycols.
I want to disagree with your perception of Inagaki on that for a second, Judge Warren. And I do want to come back just one bit on Judge Rayner's question. Inagaki discloses a class of 30 compounds. Inagaki has discusses four embodiments it calls typical, one through four. Then at the end, Inagaki purports to provide data for examples one through four. Example five, which is 1234YF, has no data, and it says it's almost similar results. There's nothing in Inagaki that says which of the 30 to pick or which of the five to pick and why you'd use them. And to your question about lubricants, Judge Lurie, the only reference at all, there has been, I think, by the board and now by the appellees, an over-reading of Inagaki. There are statements in these briefs that say Inagaki specifically says use embodiment 5. It does not. Statements that say Inagaki specifically says you can use it with a lubricant. What Inagaki says, the only reference at all to a lubricant, is in cases where there are
mixtures. But Inagaki does specifically disclose HFO 1234 as one of five examined compounds. Then it goes on and says all you have to do now or next is add machine oil. Wouldn't somebody skilled in the art look at that and take that machine oil and see what other types of oil there are?
What I'd say to that, Judge Rain, is Inagaki doesn't say take those and put a lubricant with them. What Inagaki actually says...
No, but that's what somebody skilled in the art would understand.
Well, what Inagaki... The question here and the invention in part is this particular combination, okay, the miscibility, meaning how do two things, sort of an oil and water exercise, do they stay together or do they not stay together, of a refrigerant and a lubricant is unpredictable. The board recognizes that. It's undisputed that that is an unpredictable event. What Inagaki says about lubricants is if you want to improve the solubility, you can mix this class of HFOs with prior refrigerants like 134A, 143A, and those...
Or PAG under the McGid reference?
I think I've misspoke or we have some confusion here, which is what Inagaki says is you can mix it with other refrigerants, is what I was saying.
Inagaki's, I was thinking about the lubricant.
And the only discussion of lubrication at all in Inagaki is you can combine, if you combine this class of refrigerants with some of the earlier refrigerants, which have high global warming, which you don't want, putting aside that Inagaki is silent on global warming potential, that would improve solubility, which obviously begs the question, well, what's the solubility like of this actual class of HFOs with any particular lubricant? But to take your
discussing,
point...
Discussing embodiment one of Inagaki, you say 1234ZF has unacceptable toxicity and flammability.
True.
And in the red brief, the response is, but that's not... YF, and you don't have any specific evidence to support that.
So I saw that, and I think it's an interesting effort to kind of flip this around, which is the argument, all the evidence of people of skill in the art, and the vast secondary considerations evidence in this case, is that this is a groundbreaking step change, and the reason Honeywell succeeded is because they looked not just where no one had looked, but where people were decidedly told not to look. And so they don't dispute, in the Daikin red brief, they don't even disagree with the idea that as a class of compounds, people thought unsaturated, meaning double-bonded refrigerants, were not where you wanted to be if you wanted low global warming, safe for the environment, and particularly working with an unstable or reactive lubricant like a PAG. The rebuttal to that is, okay, even if everybody thought that about the whole class, and even if you have experts saying, we knew this one was, and we knew this one was, no one at the time had examined 1234YF specifically. I don't think that changes anything. If everyone says don't use this class of compounds, and we've tested a whole host of them.
Well, that wasn't... they didn't say that exactly. They said you didn't present any evidence.
What we did present... It's not surprising that we didn't present evidence that this particular combination that Honeywell discovered was toxic, flammable, or unstable, because the reality was what's... The unexpected results here is that this particular combination went against what everyone thought about the class. So it's a bit of a catch-22. They're like, well, you didn't say it doesn't work. Well, obviously, we know it works now, but for a decade, no one looked there. And I think it's important to think, we're talking about what do people of skill in the art think in 1992 to 2002. Inagaki is a patent application filed by Daikin. It's Daikin's own work. And what do they do with it? If it's so obvious to those of skill in the art, they abandon it. And their only answer to that is, well, we didn't think there was enough commercial utility in doing so. They've already chosen to file a patent application. If it was so obvious that the fifth one described, but not the others, worked so well, why abandon it? I mean, that's certainly evidence that goes to skepticism and what those of skill in the art knew at the time as well.
Not necessarily. What they say is, at the time, there was no call for this.
Which isn't true, because at the time, they argue that people only cared about ODP, ozone depletion, the prior refrigerant, 134A, good for ozone depletion, really bad. I mean, it's 1,600 times worse from global warming than ultimately what 1234YF proved. They say no one cared about global warming. A615, the only testimony on this. CFCs, the even class before that, was known to lead to GWP, high GWP in the 70s. And the UN Framework on Climate Change is 1992. That starts talking about global warming potential. The Kyoto Protocol is 1997, also during this window, and no one's looking back at Inagaki because Inagaki didn't know and didn't say anything about the global warming potential. And then A1786.
But the regulatory climate back at that period was different. Maybe...
I don't think... Let's all step back to our own...
Do you believe in regulatory climate change?
Well, if we step back for a second and think, why do these companies, the biggest companies in the world, Daikin, Honeywell, Arkema, Mexichem, all the chemistry companies of the world are looking at all these refrigerants, and they all know global warming is an issue. They don't decide, well, let's invent a better one that's 1,600 times only when the government tells them to, because as was demonstrated here, after Honeywell demonstrated that this was now low global warming, safe, could be worked with a PAG when everyone thought it couldn't, what happens? Commercial success that's tied specifically to this, although the board disregards it entirially.
Mr.
Industry praise.
Pasco, you wanted to save some rebuttal time?
I do. I want to finish this point, but I appreciate the courtesy of that, Judge Lurie. And then we hear from people in the industry, what was considered impossible has become possible. I mean, this isn't the run-of-the-mill, oh, we have some secondary considerations case. I mean, they were disregarded here, and we have all the players failing to find it, amazed and surprised. Dr. Bivens, who was at DuPont, says, in 30 years, this was the invention in fluorine chemistry of my lifetime. And all of that's disregarded by the board as well. And so we think the board failed on obviousness. They found a motivation where there was one, and if at best they backfilled it with a Muir. And there's no argument this is not a new ground of rejection, and a minimum should be vacated and remanded, Your Honors. Thank you.
We will save the remainder of your time.
Thank you.
We move from Mr. Locascio to Mr. Lo Cicero, which Judge Wallach says is sort of Shakespearean.
It does, Your Honor, and thank you for not confusing.
And you're going to take 10 minutes and yield 5 to Mr. Krumholz.
That's right, Your Honor. Let me start by providing an answer to the two questions that Judge Rayner asked. The first was, did the board use Omori only to rebut our evidence? And the answer is yes. In fact, the board, in footnote 14, which appears at appendixes 11 and 12, says that they used Omori just as evidence of the state of the art, and that Honeywell was on notice prior to the briefing at the board as to Omori's teachings as evidence of the state of the art. The Omori was not used to reject. It simply was not. What happened is that we had this is evidentiary.
But isn't the problem here that Omori was not before the examiner?
Well, it was. May I disagree on it? It was before the examiner. It had been referenced by both Mexichem and Daikin, the two rejectors, years earlier. It was simply not referred to in the examiner's right of appeal notice or rejections. So it's not that
if the board then comes along and refers to it in making this decision, isn't that basing a rejection on new grounds?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that the rejection is in Inagaki, which has been talked about in view of Bivens and Acura and Majid and so on. I think that what happened...
But those references were before the examiner.
They were before the examiner. They were cited, and they... provide the answer to your second question was whether a worker skilled in the art would seek to use a proper lubricant, and the answer is, of course, yes. And you know, the secondary reference that we've come to think highly of is the one that Mr. LoCascio referred to, which is Bivens.
Counsel, I note that the board said, we agree with the patent owner that similar stability of HF01234YF in PAG would not have been expected. In other words, you've got an unexpected property here. And then they come to the conclusion by disparaging properties as being inherent. Pages 44 and page 15 of their opinion, the properties are inherent. One cannot obtain patentability based on inherent properties. But we're talking obviousness here. Inherent properties don't make novel something that is known. But here we're talking about obviousness. And that which is only inherent and not known does not does not defeat obviousness because you don't know of it if it's only inherent.
Yes, Your Honor, that's certainly an accurate statement of the law. But what happened here is this. After the examiner made a prima facie case of obviousness, and then because it's an examinational procedure, not an adjudicative, because it was inter partes re-exam, then the burden properly shifted to Honeywell, not the burden of proof, but the burden of production. And so Honeywell put forth evidence of so-called unexpected stability. Let's take that one. And in response to that, to counter that, the requesters, Mexichem and Daikin, put forth Omori and said that stability would have been
before the
expected.
Examiner.
Yes, well, before the board.
Before the board,
and the board disagreed. The board said no, and the board concluded that the fact that a different HFO, the one disclosed in Omori, was shown to be used with the PAG lubricant.
But what I'm getting at is the board seems to have overlooked what was clearly unexpected, whether it's the stability or flammability, with a false legal premise, namely that you can't premise patentability on what is only inherent. But we're talking about obviousness.
I think if that was
novelty.
Error, then it was harmless error.
Because
you have, I believe it's appropriate to look at it in the context of the motivation to combine. What had happened here, and Honeywell in its brief makes a big deal about thousands of compounds and thousands of combinations, and therefore it's, the whole thing, the whole ability to combine a refrigerant and a lubricant was unexpected. But that's not what happened. We're not talking about thousands of compounds. We're talking about an agave. We're talking about an HFO. Which HFO? This one. The one that's recited in the claims. And we're talking about using lubricants. Which ones? Not any lubricants, but PAG lubricants. As the Bivens reference says, PAG lubricants are an acceptable alternative for use with HFC-based refrigerants, which is what we're talking about. So in that context, it was not unexpected. Now, I think that's right. I think an inherent property is relevant to the obviousness analysis. It's not relevant, I think, to the to analysis of anticipation, but it is relevant because it determines whether where one would have looked.
What would happen in this case if Arur didn't come before the board at all? Let's say that had not been brought to the board.
I think that the board would have said that it was unpredictable. Remember, I don't think it would have said that stability, for example.
Would we be affirming the board?
I think so. I think it was just further support.
Well, the fact that it did appear before the board and it was a basis for its decision and it wasn't before the examiner, then shouldn't we reverse the decision of the board?
And remand, with respect, I don't believe that would be correct. If Omori was a ground of rejection and had not been, and was a new ground of rejection, then the case should be reversed and remanded. That's what this court's precedent says, and that's only fair. But the cornerstone of a new ground of rejection is whether or not Honeywell had notice, which they did, and an opportunity to respond. Remember, Omori and its teachings were not unknown. It was not a surprise to Honeywell when this came up during the board proceedings, but they simply never chose to discuss it. I think what happened...
The issue isn't whether it was at the board. And the issue isn't who had opportunity to address this at the board. The issue is whether it was before the examiner.
It was before the examiner, just not relied on by the examiner. Now, there's no doubt that, as we said in the red brief, there's no doubt that the Mexican and Daikin had mentioned Omori. I think what we have to look at, so let's ignore Omori, as Joanna suggests. If we ignore Omori, then what we would have had is the board making a factual finding, which is entitled to deference if it is supported by substantial evidence that stability is not unexpected. And as the board said, if you look at Table 3, which shows YF, the prior art YF, by the way, and ZF and other of these HFOs, some of the characteristics, fluorine and TAN, suggest that, and dimerization suggest that, some of those suggest that YF is better, some suggest that ZF is better, some suggest that YE is better. So the board simply said that this evidence does not overcome the very strong motivation to combine the prior art teaching this refrigerant, not a different one, a similar one, one in the same class, but this refrigerant with this lubricant as shown by Bivens, Majid, and Acura. I mean, Bivens says that you use PEG lubricants with hydrofluorocarbon compounds, and that's what we have here.
Well, so the board also relies on Honeywell's expert, even without a memory.
That's right. That's exactly right, Judge. And Honeywell's expert, I mean, we can get into the weeds here, whether dimers are generated. Even the board says that Honeywell's expert doesn't put forth evidence that the lack of or the failure to generate dimers is in fact evidence of expected stability. So it's a factual determination which we believe would have stood even without Omori. One other thing I'd like to say in my remaining minute or so is my worthy adversary talks about Daikin's failure to pursue prosecution of Inagaki. Well, and he says it couldn't be that important if Daikin didn't go forward. But on the other hand, as I think Judge Wallach suggested, there's a declaration of Dr. Shibanuma, and Dr. Shibanuma explains what happened. He explains that they didn't pursue Inagaki, Daikin didn't, because at the time, R134A was the lubricant of choice, and it would have been so throughout most of the life of Inagaki, and they made the decision not to do it. And of course, that testimony is unchallenged. Now, what happened is that the global warming regulations didn't begin to be considered until the early 2000s, which is 9 years after Inagaki was filed. So, in fact, Inagaki, if they had pursued it, it would have expired in 2010. So, Dr. Shibanuma's testimony is unrebutted. It demonstrates that these so-called objective considerations are insignificant, and that the board's decision should be affirmed on the basis of substantial evidence. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Krumholz has 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. First time I ever walked up to this table, I tripped over my suitcase, so I'm trying to be careful.
So far, so good.
So far, so good.
You fell into good company.
Thank you, sir. I fully support everything my friend over here just said to you gentlemen.
Including when he said that when he agreed that the board made error, he called it harmless error.
Well, I didn't finish my sentence, sir, but I appreciate the interjection because I did want to say right up until, but I don't believe the board made any error. Because what we have here is the board considered the two main references, which are Inagaki and which are Bivens.
But how can unexpected properties be ignored in an obviousness consideration when they're inherent?
I think you first start with when you look at the arguments that were made by Honeywell. Honeywell repeatedly argues that it was unexpected that this would have lower global warming potential. That only invokes the refrigerant 1234YF, which is expressly disclosed in Inagaki. Honeywell repeatedly argues time and time again that it's the refrigerant properties that are what are unexpected, and that solely invokes 1234YF. And those are inherent properties of that refrigerant.
On stability
now,
and the flammability properties unexpected and useful?
I would agree that they're useful, but you have a specific reference that says in Bivens, when you have an HFC refrigerant, you do not elect, as you used to under CFC refrigerants, to go with mineral oils. You elect, and these are Bivens' words, you elect the use of a PAG or a POE lubricant, a category of those lubricants. And we have here, we have an HFC. It's made of hydrogen, fluorine, and carbon. It's expressly disclosed in Embodiment 5 of the Inagaki reference. It's expressly disclosed as being compatible with lubricants. It's expressly disclosed as being mixable with 134A, which the record below clearly shows is used with PAG lubricants. And in fact, that Acura reference shows it expressly being used with PAG lubricants, the most common type of PAG lubricant in an automobile, ND8.
Counselor, the board said that it disagreed with the examiner with respect with the examiner's reasoning on stability.
Mm-hmm.
Is that error?
That the board disagreed with the examiner's reasoning on stability?
I mean, it did say that.
Yeah, right? Yeah, but I mean, I don't think that's...
So where does that take you? I mean,
it takes me to the point that I think the board gave what was far harder on the examiner's arguments than were correct, but I don't think the board made error.
Didn't it rely on Omura in making that statement?
Omura was brought into this case solely to rebut the position that Honeywell took after the fact, where they made the broad statement that HFOs would never have been thought to ever be used with a PAG. That was the broad statement that was made. We brought that in to say that is not true, that is expressly not true.
This is before the board.
And that is expressed, that was before the board. I made that argument, excuse me, I raised that in oral argument in response.
Okay, these arguments were not made before the examiner.
We brought up O'Murray before the examiner. O'Murray was...
Is that a yes or no? I mean,
O'Murray, they were arguments that were made before the examiner because O'Murray was specifically identified in...
The examiner did not rely on O'Murray
because he had
making his decision.
Because he had the great prior art of Inagaki and he had the great prior art of Bivens. He did not need to bring in O'Murray. Remember, we have really strong prior art here. And we have embodiment 5 of Inagaki, which is the exact same chemical, 1,2,3,4-YF.
So the examiner didn't have to rely on it, but the board did rely on it.
The examiner didn't have to rely on it. The board chose to bring it up because I may have oversold it when I made my
Isn't
oral argument.
Isn't that new grounds of rejection?
No, it is not new grounds of rejection. It is simply identifying in the secondary considerations that the state of the art clearly showed that people prior to the date of invention would have mixed an HFO with a PAG lubricant. I'm sorry if I'm speaking too loudly. Sometimes my voice starts to rise, and I don't mean to give offense if I do. Okay. I do want to raise one other issue really quick. I want to put on the record my objection on the basis of judicial estoppel that claims 1 through 25 should be stricken and they should not be proceeded with based upon the absolute representations made by Honeywell to receive a stay of their case against Arkema in Philadelphia. They said they would never, ever go forward with those original claims. They went back on their word with a federal judge. I don't think they should be allowed to proceed. I have 14 seconds left if you have another question.
You're down to 10, and it sounds like you're waving.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very
much.
We
ask that the decision be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. LoCascio. There's a couple of minutes plus.
Thank you. There's no avoiding that this is a new ground of rejection, to Judge Reyna's point. And let's just talk about what the case law says. They say it's only about secondary considerations. And, well, it was the thrust of it, or you were on notice. There's no case anyone points to that would say that's okay and it doesn't support a remand. And the reasons are obvious. Because under Biederman, Rambis, Stepan, all of them, in those cases, there wasn't even a new reference. Those references were all discussed by the examiner, and that wasn't enough. Those were new grounds for rejection. In this case, the examiner never said boo about it. And if he had, the process, the way it's supposed to work, is then Honeywell would put in descriptions and evidence about what Amuri is. Amuri is not a C3. It's a C4 compound. Amuri is sterically hindered. All things that no one of skill in the art has ever put in the record. And instead, we have the board saying, well, we think this sentence that says relative stability flips all the expert testimony on its head. So it is a new ground, and it should be at minimum reversed and remanded. With respect to Inagaki. Oh, and the statement footnote 14 says it was we had notice. We respond to the rejections of the examiner. That's how it works for the examiner. And when you get to the board, you are appealing a decision from an examiner. Notice might be relevant in an IPR. It is not the standard in any sense, and there's no case that says it is for reexamination. Judge Lurie, your question, I think, hits this whole problem on the head of what the examiner did and what the board did. Inherency is all fine and well for anticipation. We have a combination, and by the board's own acknowledgement, this is not found in the prior art, and you have to pick two references. You have to pick two references, and we think starting with these two and saying, well, would you figure out that they're compatible is not the right exercise. But here, both the examiner twice, once rejected by the board, and then the board to overcome it at the end of the day says, we think stability or miscibility is inherent. That's wrong as a matter of law because all the testimony is it was not known, and what was not known cannot be inherent. So we think there should be a reversal, not just a remand.
Well, it may be inherent, but doesn't contribute to obviousness.
It does not support the obviousness rejection, to be sure, and what people of skill in the art knew at the time matters. And the last point I'll make, with your indulgence, is the board turns obviousness on its head. It says the evidence from the patent owner shows it's unpredictable, but then via Mure, they say everything's unpredictable. And if everything's unpredictable, the board's view is nothing's patentable, and that's not this court's law.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.